Hi, and welcome back to the Beauty of Conflict podcast. We know you're busy, and we want to make it easy for you to understand how conflict may likely be showing up in a way that's impacting your team negatively. We've recorded the first three chapters of our book for you to listen to for free. Get your free audio sample at thriveinc.com/free sample. That's thriveinc.com/freesample. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And today we have a special guest with us, Julian Mirabel. And just to give you a tidbit about what we're going to talk about, according to the American Psychological Association's just released 2023 Work in American survey, nearly one in five workers say their workplaces are unbearably toxic, while over half agreed their employers would claim their workplaces are healthy, even when they're not. And if you think that's a one-off study, a recent Deloitte study confirmed that when it comes to employees' well-being, leaders are entirely out of touch.
I know.
Powerful. So we have Julian Mirabel, a PhD. He is an award-winning teacher, author, and professional speaker. Originally from Paris, France, he is among the founding scholars in the emerging field of positive communication. He's published in the most rigorous journals in the field of communication. He is co-author of the new book, Positive Communication for Leaders, Proven Strategies for Inspiring Unity and Effective Change. So welcome, Julian. We're excited to talk to you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation and to sharing ideas and dialogue with you.
Yeah. Okay. But I do have to ask about this. Your initial big idea came from the World Cup, the soccer superstar. And I wanted to know more about what your connection is to those two, Antoine and
Antoine Griezmann and Didier. My main connection is I'm French and really follow the World Cup very closely. Okay. And I'm a big fan.
Okay.
And so if you were following the World Cup a couple of years ago, France was making it to the final for the very second time, right?
Yes.
And they were about to win the World Cup. Argentina stole that championship. But there's always a story beneath the story. And the story that caught my eye at the time was you've got these great stars and you've got this leader who's really had extraordinary results, both by winning a World Cup for the first time, but almost winning a second one. And then in the end, is able to create a great team where people are respecting him, but also really love him. And to me, that's the balance of great leadership, being able to really create meaningful relationships, but also being able to achieve extraordinary results.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, I'm sure this may be a bastardization of it, but our American TV show of Ted Lasso, he persona, have you seen that?
And, yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Okay, good. Okay. So he is that kind of coach. And I don't know if he was actually modeled off of.
Not that guy.
Not, but there he
got.
He was modeled off of a real person who creates those positive relationships and cares about the people.
That's right. And the show does a really nice job showing the ups and downs.
So we were talking about Ted Lasso, and even I'm an Olympic athlete. And I have to tell you, my Olympic coach was not a Ted Lasso or Dieter. Is it Dieter? Is that the coach?
Didier Deschamps. Yeah.
Yes. There you go. He wasn't that.
Yeah. It's so hard. And it's so hard to find someone like that, right? Because they're really extraordinary leaders. They're people who can do both. Push people to extraordinary accomplishments and yet create something very meaningful along the way. And I want leaders of all walks of life to be able to do that kind of extraordinary thing.
Yeah. And I think in business and sports, wherever it is, I think a lot of times what happens is the stress response takes over. And so people think, oh my God, I'm going to lose as the coach or the boss. We're going to fail. So I need to drive you hard. And it evaporates that positive, caring human connection is my hunch.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, too. And in the world of business, I think the pressure is tasks, right? Like getting things done is what gets in the middle of often relationships and the pressure that people feel. We need to meet this goal by the end of the quarter. We need to accomplish this task. And even as a manager, right, sometimes you can feel like the task is more important than your people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake because it's more like the other way around. The people should be number one. The tasks are equally important. I never want to lose sight of the organizational mission, but relationship is kind of, for me, relationship is going to be number one.
We're with you on that. Although we would say, it's interesting. I was thinking about this, like people are the foundation of any business, whether it's the employees or whether it's the customer. Like in so many times, the people in both of those get lost because of the task and the desire to be what is considered to be successful, like hit the OKRs or hit the metrics, the numbers, the revenue goals. And it's like, wow, both of those can so easily lose sight of the humans on either side of that, either the employees or the customer. And yeah, tell us,
what is, in your, since you've written a whole book on this, what would you say positive communication is and what is it not?
Yes.
Okay, so let's start with what it is. So positive communication to me is any verbal, nonverbal behavior that we can do in our interactions with others that tend to build confidence and move us in the direction of the great virtues, is the best way I can put it. Things like compassion and courage and justice. And of course, we can always be the virtue, but we can try to inch our way in that direction.
Yeah.
But in the book, Alex Lyon and I, my friend and colleague, unpack a model that I developed now about 10 years ago. In 2024 will be 10 years that I developed that model. And the model focuses on six key behaviors that are the heart of human relationships. So I'm just going to list them very
quickly. Yeah, sure. We love it.
So greeting, because greeting allows us to create connection. Asking, because asking allows us to discover. Complimenting, because complimenting allows us to affect people's identities, their sense of self. Disclosure, because it allows us to deepen relationships. Encouraging, because that allows us to use communication as a gift to give people the support they need to succeed. And then listening, which then allows us to transcend the differences that exist between us and other people. So those are six behaviors. And when a leader practices them, I think they put themselves in a position to inspire and influence people in their lives.
Yeah. Well, let's even start with the first one, greeting. Like, what is it, just taking the time to acknowledge, or is there are specific skills that people need to develop?
Yeah, I think, first of all, there's a lot there, right? So at the heart, greeting, if you look in the simplest form, greeting is really about just first making the move, initiating the interaction. And in all kinds of realms of life, it's something that we've studied in every culture. Greeting takes place. So let's say you're a leader. Part of what we want people to think about is when they go to work in the morning, they have to take some time to initiate interaction with their stakeholders. And those stakeholders can be colleagues. Those stakeholders can be their boss. Their stakeholders can be customers, as you pointed out earlier. So for me, the simplest way of exemplifying greeting is I'm going to make an effort in my own communication to greet in the direction of others and really invite connection, because many people don't do that. And most in the workplace, if you're the leader, most people are not going to come to you. You're going to have to go to them to create those relationships.
Well, and I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense. And I can imagine with all that's happened now with remote work and things like that, that's even more challenging because lots of companies are still either partially or hybrid versions of being online. And it's a lot more difficult, I would to have that meeting process.
That is correct.
You'd have to formalize it more, like, or at least be, I do think, no, people won't approach a leader, and we've worked for all different kinds of leaders. And sometimes there's somebody who's not as socially aware, and they have no clue that, hey, these people are actually wanting to know that you're okay with them and we can connect. I'm not bugging you. So it makes a lot of sense that, and I do think it's harder.
And it is, like, greeting was so powerful about it, the way we acknowledge each other's presence. So we acknowledge that we are visible. And when leaders don't do that, then the employees interpret the behavior of not being greeted as, I am invisible. Mm-hmm. And it makes it even more important, I think, for human connection. So I would say that's one way of thinking about that behavior. But then it can get more complex, right? So we can start thinking about, like, just even in our own lives, how many people can you greet across cultures? Like, how many languages do you speak and are able to start interaction with?
Wow.
And just most of us, that's a very small amount, right? But like, I was in Saudi Arabia about a month and a half ago. and I did a training for people there. And I can promise you, me starting the whole interaction with Assalamu Alaikum begins everything on a totally different note than starting in English.
Yeah.
Or I was in Costa Rica and I gave a talk there and I started and I had a whole introduction in Spanish. And I don't speak it fluently, but I like wrote it down. I'm so happy to see you. And it's so good to see everybody here. And at the end, people clapped. They were like so excited that I was making the effort to be part of the culture.
Yeah.
So to me, greeting is also that kind of move.
I like it. Like meeting them where they are, making who they are important enough that you go through that effort.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. It just is something like when even people walk into your house, you say, hey, I'm home. Like those simple things that show you matter to me. You yeah, are on right. my screen yes. and you matter to me. So versus the opposite of you're invisible to me.
That's correct. And if you notice, so sorry to keep pushing on, but if you notice with a greeting, what's interesting to it is the first thing to disappear when conflict emerges. Even in our own romantic relationships, right? If my wife and I have a fight, the first thing is distance. Yeah. I need space from you. And then often you have to, okay, who's going to say hello first? You know? And Alex and I's argument in the book, obviously, is that leaders have to be the ones who do it first, right? There's a conflict in the workplace, and maybe you had a hard conversation with one of your employees. You have to initiate the contact right. because you're in a position of leadership and responsibility.
Yeah, I think that's so true. That's great. Talk about, now we don't have time to go through all six, but talk about complimenting, because I think a lot of times some leaders think, oh, like even praise, I'm not going to give any praise because, you know, I don't want to be soft. They don't want it, so they don't give it. So can you share more about the impact of that?
I think it's also sometimes become the sandwich technique, and it's phony. So I actually am curious, because that to me is actually even more toxic than, so how do you explain what compliments?
If you did pick up the book, you'll notice I do not have, Alex and I do not have the sandwich technique in there. I'm not a big proponent of that. What I am a proponent of is realizing that as a communicator, you have options. And one of those options is to be critical and to point out to people what they're doing that's not right. Another option is to use your communication in a way that's going to strengthen people. So of course, some leaders say, I don't have time to do this, or I don't want to do it. But the reality is, in the world of relationship, what matters is not what you think. What matters is not what you feel. What matters is what you do. Mm-hmm. And complimenting is the most direct way we have to tell people in our lives, here's how I see you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's who I think you are. And to me, that's very powerful, right? I was actually, so when I was in Costa Rica, that evening I went out to eat in San Jose by myself after doing a training. And I get to the restaurant and they put me at the bar because they didn't want to lose one table because there was a pretty popular restaurant. So I'm at the bar, another person comes in, and it was a Japanese executive. And of course, as I would with my positive stuff, I started making connection with them and we talked all night. But here's one thing he said to me. He says he's having this transformative moment in his career where he realized he's been a pretty terrible leader. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, I used to go to the office and like not talk to anybody. I would go straight to my PC and get my fingers on the keyboard and start working. And even when people came to say hello, I'd be barely acknowledging them and saying, oh, thank you. And then he would just keep on working. And he said, for a long time, the only feedback I gave to people was, you're doing this wrong, do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized, as he told me the story, that you can't treat people as objects, that it was hurting him as much as it was hurting people around him. And he realized that in order to be a good leader, you had to treat people from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Complimenting for me is the way we begin to do that. And all the research shows, it's like decades of research, shows that anytime you criticize performance, you actually decrease performance for the employee.
Mm.
And anytime you compliment, you actually improve performance. So anytime you focus on strength is when you're going to improve performance. That's now been documented across a large meta study. So studies of studies to show that there's no denying.
Okay. I'm not a great advocate here. Only because I agree that if you are doing it related to task, that makes sense. You want people to, however, if you're doing it related to location, like sometimes, like in human relationships, if all you do is say when you're close, I don't think people believe it unless you also say when you're distant. And so sometimes it's like, if I say to you, I'm having a problem with the work you're producing, and I want to talk to you about it because I'm actually creating distance. And so if you don't talk about it, it's going to be a problem. So that's me, and I want to find out what's going on. So it could be, I don't know that I'm, because I always say to leaders, sometimes you do have to say when you're having a difficulty with somebody. You don't necessarily have to criticize them, but you need to say why it is that it's important to you to share the information and why it may impact them.
So what do you think about that?
Okay, so my first thought is those two things are not incompatible. That's why in the model, I have the behavior of disclosure. Disclosure is talking to people openly and honestly about the issues. And disclosure can be positive too, right? So it can include things like expressing gratitude. But positive communication is not about shying away from difficult conversation. To me, it's about moving in all the way. But the fact that you have to have a difficult conversation does not prevent you, maybe not in that moment, but in the scheme of the relationships, to use your communication to tell people around you the strength that you see in them. See, that's what John Gottman found when he studied marriages. He's very famous, and what he found that was the strongest predictor of relationship success was when the couple was able to preserve a 1-to-5 ratio. For every one negative act in the relationship, it is compensated by 5 positive acts. If you have that ratio, relationship's safe. Because it's normal. I'm going to be critical sometimes. It's like, I mean, I'm a dad. I've got 3 kids. Do you think everything I say is a compliment? No, I've got to tell my kids to go clean up their room. And I've got to go tell them they did something wrong. And we have to talk about that. But as a communicator, I have to realize that people's sense of self is always at stake. And I can choose when I have the thought, oh man, this person did a great job. Instead of keeping in it, I can go make an effort to say it. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's about delivering a meaningful compliment and capitalizing on the thoughts we often have. So I actually think sometimes people have the thoughts, they just don't share them. And in the world of relationship, your thoughts just don't matter because the compliment is what's going to matter. Is that helping? I hope I'm...
Well, I think what you're both saying is really it's in the delivery, because even how, Susan, you were saying, it's more I'm making our relationship important enough to say, hey, I'm distant and this is a problem for me. And versus you did it wrong is much more about you're the problem and I'm disapproving. So even in the Gottman thing, I think if I'm like criticizing you versus that's the 5 or the 1. But if I'm saying, hey, I'm having a really hard time because of whatever, that doesn't seem like criticism. It's more like I'm like disclosing. I'm being real and I care about you and I want this relationship better.
That's right.
That has a different sort of whole different category. I would put it in more your disclosing piece in your model.
That's correct. Yeah. So that for me, that's more like how do you give feedback or difficult feedback to, say, employees? And there are techniques for doing that. We unpack them in the book. Those hard conversations always go better when you've got a really great relationship with people. So if people feel criticized all the time, they're not going to be responsive. They'll respond even less to that difficult moment because they don't know you and they don't feel valued. Right. The fundamental human needs are to be respected and liked, to be seen as autonomous, and to be respected. And so the more your communication does that, the more you're going to be able to get closer to people. And to me, that rule, I give you the marital example, but to me as a communicator, I think about that in my marriage. I think about that with my children. I think about that in my professional role as a leader and as a faculty member. Because the research is so clear. Anytime I criticize my students for performance, a decreased performance.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. You also have listening is your last one. And you have 5 ways to ask better questions and listen deeply. So how can you give us some tips on from your point of view on how to do that?
on how to listen or how to ask?
Well, both. Oh, that's right. Asking is a different, asking is number two, right? Versus listening is six. Help us through both of those.
So, okay. So I'll do it very quickly. So for questions, the big thing that I talk about and that Alex and I unpack in the book, really in my model, is making the switch from asking closed-ended questions to open-ended questions. To me, it's the hardest thing. And I know it sounds simple, but like on a Monday morning, you're going to the office and you ask your team, did you have a good weekend? And all you're going to get is yes and no.
Yeah.
So it doesn't allow you to connect. But if you go to one person and you say, hey, how was your weekend? Suddenly the conversation can take a turn. Or tell me what you've been up to with your family. Suddenly the conversation is going to take a turn. So for me, making that shift is key. And if you notice, when we have difficult conversations, it's the last thing we want to do. The last thing we want to do is ask an open-ended question. Did you take the garbage outside? Or did you get this report done on time? We go straight to closing questions. Very often we go straight to our own assumptions. So that's the first kind of move that I would talk to people about. Listening does include, obviously, the ability to ask questions. But for me, it requires a couple more elements, like a higher level of openness towards the possibility of being wrong, first of all. And so how do you become open? I can share a technique that helped me. So typically when I think about listening, I take my right hand and I make a really tight fist like this. And then at some point I'm like, okay, just take a deep breath and open your hand so that the palm faces up. That to me is what listening is all about. Listening is all about opening your hand. Because when we have conflicts or difficult moments, we get tight. It's just physiological. And the whole art of listening is being able to stay open, even though every ounce of your body doesn't want to, right?
Yeah.
And the harder the conversation, the harder it is to do so. So for me, that's these two things, opening your hand and asking open-ended questions, will go a long way in many, many interactions if you can master that.
I think that's a good, just even pattern interrupt in the middle of a discussion to actually and then take a breath, because one, you're breathing, and then opening. Because it goes with our whole idea of how we do curiosity and vulnerability. So disclosing would be more vulnerable. Listening is where this is the curiosity. How can
That's right. That's right. It's Right. I mean, now you're right away in a different mode. I literally will do, if I'm in a tough meeting now, I literally put my hand underneath the table and I tell myself, just open your hand, Julian. And just, I physically open the hand to help me manage this moment. And what happens is exactly what you said. Instead of tightening up, I become curious. Mm-hmm. And that makes a whole shift. I mean, I can't control the whole interaction, but I can control my behaviors as much as I can as a communicator. And so that suddenly makes a big shift, hopefully.
Yes. Well, I wanted to, you kind of said some of these, how can positive communication create a highly cohesive team?
This is where it gets pretty complex, right? So on the one hand, in the book, we really focus on the role of the leader in practicing those behaviors. So from my vantage point, if you practice these six things that are kind of like your master plan or your guide or your compass, then when you interact with other people, you're going to begin to create high quality connections with people, a concept from Jane Dutton at the University of Michigan. So that's the first step. But you can't control the whole team. So what you really need other people to do is also begin to do the same thing. So you need to apply these behaviors, model them, so that other people can then be inspired by them and begin the same process. Training is going to be important. And then using some of these behaviors in structure. So in the book, we do show this. So for instance, under listening, there's a great technique called 1-2-4-all. It's called a liberating structure. So if you're working with your team, instead of conducting a meeting like you would typically do it with an agenda, you just, many leaders are just basically report things, right? Mm-hmm. So what about once in a while you use a 1-2-4-all technique? You ask people to solve a real problem and you start 1 with reflection, 2 with pairing, 3 with a group of 4 who discuss and make decisions together, and then you come back as a whole group. What that does is that slows down the process of communication and it allows people to create a much better environment. So as a leader, you have to, I think, become a master of your own communication, But then you have to use these techniques and apply them in the group context so you can slowly begin to create a team atmosphere. I'll give you another example. In the book, we talk about just using icebreakers. And I know it sounds simple and goofy, but many meetings are held without icebreakers at all. And what that does is that it cuts short the fact that people don't need to connect. So what an icebreaker does, if it's good and well-designed, is it creates a moment of connection. And that is important. And as you pointed out earlier, especially in today's world where people meet via Zoom, many people feel lonely. I think the Gallup latest report worldwide is that 1 in 4 adults experiences loneliness, right? Pretty severe levels of loneliness. In the workplace, 53% of CEOs feel very lonely. So that means we're losing our capacity for deepening those relationships. So those are a few techniques in the book. We take it from behavior to team level to organizational level in every chapter.
I love that. And that can be done. The 1, 2, 4 all can be done on Zoom because you've got breakout rooms. So that can,
exactly.
And we have found that as well. We were working with a CEO who's like, Zoom, we can't do brainstorming. And we're like, well, why don't you break it down to smaller groups and then come back? And he's like, that's a great idea.
So, yeah.
Because people are like, do I talk now? Do I not? How does it work?
Yeah. Sure.
Well, this is great. I love your concepts. They definitely dovetail into how we work with people in our Beauty of Conflict. And we have a couples book and a business book. So both of those things are quite close to our
heart. Awesome. Love that.
Yeah. Anything else you want to leave, a tidbit you want to leave with our listeners?
I guess the tidbit I would say is practice this. Practice positive communication. Thinking about it, reading about it is not affecting relationships. I think doing it is the biggest trigger. And all you got to do is, you know, make contact, initiate a connection with somebody maybe you haven't to. Begin to ask different questions. Use any opportunities in your life to compliment, to really say to people in a meaningful way, I don't want it to be inauthentic. Here's how I feel about you. Here's how I see you. And then have the heart to listen deeply and to disclose meaningfully. And I think my students report this all the time, you would notice a change immediately in your in your human connections.
Excellent. Well, how can people learn more about you and your book?
So you can find the book. The new book is Positive Communication for Leaders on Amazon. It's currently fully available and we got great reviews from professionals. People find it really practical. We also have a website dedicated to the book called positivecommunicationforleaders.com. And to learn more about me, just befriend me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there and I give tips almost every week. So either excerpts from the book or any advice and reflections on positive communication. So come join this adventure. The last thing I will ask is I founded in 2022 the Positive Communication Network, which is a group, a community of people who want to study this, but also work with practitioners. So learn more about the positivecommunicationnetwork.net. And we'll have some events where we bring in speakers. And on March 15th, 2024, we're going to have an annual virtual conference for free.
Excellent. Well, this has been terrific, Julian. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
Hey, thank you all so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you want to take some of what you've learned on today's episode to the next level, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
Go to www.thriveinc.com/teamkit to learn more. That's www.thriveinc.com/teamkit.